From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Like in any conflict, we are concerned that civilian populations should be spared, that every effort must be made in any war, in any internal conflict, never to target civilians. And should war erupt in Iraq, I believe the Iraqi people don't deserve more suffering. They have suffered enough.
Sergio De Mello, the top UN official in Iraq, with along at least 19 others, was killed yesterday in one of the deadliest attacks in UN history. Today we'll play a Democracy Now! Interview with him we did last September. We go to Baghdad, UN headquarters, when it was bombed. We speak with the former UN chief in Iraq, Hans von Sponeck. His office was De Mello's until he resigned in 2000. He is fiercely critical of the U.S. occupation and says, while the attack was horrible yesterday, he was not surprised. And we go to Jerusalem to speak to a witness of the Ba'ath bombing that killed 20 people yesterday.
The scene was brightly lit up by floodlights that were brought out by the authorities as they were working to extract people from the wreckage. I got up to right about 30 feet away from where the bodies were being taken off of the bus, and the whole scene was very surreal. I saw one body being loaded onto an ambulance, which couldn't have been more than 3 or 4 feet tall.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations headquarters in Baghdad has been destroyed by a truck bombing, killing 20 people, injuring more than 100 in one of the deadliest attacks ever directed at the United Nations. Among the dead was Sergio De Mello, the top UN official in Baghdad. The explosion happened about 4:30 Iraq time in the afternoon, while hundreds of UN officials, workers, and journalists were inside the converted hotel. A cement truck loaded with explosives is believed to have crashed into the building. The attack came less than 2 weeks after a car bomb destroyed the Jordanian embassy in Baghdad, killing 17. No group took responsibility for the attacks. Paul Bremer, who's overseeing the U.S. occupation, accused Syria of permitting militants into Iraq. U.S. and U.N. officials said De Mello may have been the target of the attack since the bomb struck so close to his office. The Guardian of London reports, quote, security at the building was about as lax as it was possible to get in post-war Baghdad. Cars were allowed to pull up next to the compound. There were no tanks or armored vehicles outside. The headquarters had no protective berms, and there was no massive U.S. military presence. The Wall Street Journal reports that the UN officials had asked the U.S.-led coalition last week to expand its security realm to include foreign embassies and offices of non-government agencies in Iraq, but the U.S. said no. The Los Angeles Times reported the UN may have been attacked because De Mello had recently expressed support for U.S. policy and the new Iraqi Governing Council. De Mello is a 55-year-old Brazilian diplomat who'd served in the United Nations since 1969 in some of the world's most sensitive areas, including East Timor, Yugoslavia, Cambodia, and Bangladesh. Bernard Kouchner, co-founder of Doctors Without Borders, said of De Mello, Sergio is dead. For us, he died as an activist, not as an international bureaucrat. He was a human rights and peace activist, a just man who fought against all forms of extremism. In Brazil, President Lula declared 3 days of national mourning in honor of De Mello. Among the other dead is American Rick Hooper, who worked in the Department of Political Affairs, and Canadian Chris Klein Beckman, who served as program coordinator for UNICEF. It is also believed a number of Iraqi UN employees were killed. Next door to the UN headquarters is Baghdad's Spinal Cord Hospital, which also suffered damage from the blast. The hospital had to be evacuated after the ceiling fell in. At least 8 patients, many of whom already couldn't walk, were injured. Today, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan said that the United Nations will stay in Iraq despite yesterday's, quote, senseless attack. In other news from the Middle East, at least 20 people died in Israel last night when a Palestinian suicide bomber blew up a bus in West Jerusalem. More than 100 people were injured. The New York Times described it as one of the deadliest attacks since the Second Intifada began 3 years ago. The bombing marks the most serious blow to the 6-week-old ceasefire. The bus was carrying religious Jews who'd been visiting the holy site, the Wailing Wall. After the bombing, Israel shut the Palestinian border, froze peace negotiations, and canceled plans to withdraw from 4 West Bank towns. There were reports that both Islamic Jihad and Hamas took responsibility for the attack. In a phone call to the Associated Press, a representative of Islamic Jihad warned that Israel would face retribution, quote, like an earthquake, because Israel had killed one of its top commanders, Ahmed Seder, last Thursday. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz reports Prime Minister Ariel Sharon is meeting with advisors today to discuss Israel's response. Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas condemned the attack and announced he'd cut off talks with Islamic Jihad and Hamas. Meanwhile, in this country, U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft yesterday launched a 2-week PR campaign to defend the controversial Patriot Act, which has come under intense criticism. In a speech yesterday at the American Enterprise Institute, Ashcroft presented himself as a preserver of liberty and freedom in the United States. He spoke before a backdrop that read, "Preserving life and liberty." He quoted the Gettysburg Address. He announced the launching of a new website that prominently quotes the Declaration of Independence. He ended his speech by saying, quote, "As long as there is an America, liberty must not, will not, shall not perish from the earth." Meanwhile, critics continue to attack Ashcroft and his Patriot Act. Laura Murphy of the ACLU said, quote, "The problem is this government has decided to allow the FBI to search our homes without telling us, to seize our library records even when it's not remotely related to criminal activity." Georgetown Law Professor David Cole said of Ashcroft's tour, quote, "The fact that they need to do this shows how much public opinion has shifted on the issue." But the Justice Department dismissed public opinion. Department spokeswoman Barbara Comstock, while wearing a T-shirt that read "Freedom," said the criticism is coming from, quote, "a small vocal minority who are spreading misinformation." Last month, the House voted 300-9, 309-118 to scale back portions of the Patriot Act. More than 150 towns and cities across the country have passed resolutions condemning the Patriot Act. The Washington Post reports 2 of the top executives at the Ohio-based utility firm First Energy are major financial supporters of President Bush. Investigators are focusing on First Energy as the possible source of last week's blackout. Campaign records show the company's chair and chief executive Peter Berg co-hosted the $600,000 fundraiser for Bush 6 weeks ago. The company's president and chief operating officer, Anthony Alexander, was designated a pioneer by Bush because he raised over $100,000 for his election. Altogether, the Center for Responsive Politics found energy and natural resource interests gave Bush $3.6 million during his 2000 campaign. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said yesterday the U.S. will again support Colombia policy shooting down planes the U.S. suspects of carrying drugs. The U.S. has opposed the air patrol since 2001 when a plane carrying a U.S. missionary and her baby was shot down in Peru after it was mistaken to be the plane of a drug runner. Both were killed. Rumsfeld made the announcement during a one-day visit to Colombia. In California, Governor Gray Davis last night accused Republicans of orchestrating, quote, a right-wing power grab by trying to, quote, steal elections. In a televised address, Davis admitted he made mistakes handling California's energy and budget crisis, but asked voters to reject the Republican-backed vote to recall him from office. And finally, this news from South Dakota. Republican Congressmember William Janklow may face criminal charges after being involved in a fatal car accident over the weekend. A state prosecutor said yesterday Janklow had likely run a stoplight before crashing into a motorcyclist. Delita here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The UN headquarters in Baghdad has been destroyed by a truck bomb that killed at least 20 people in one of the deadliest attacks ever directed at the United Nations. It occurred at 4:30 yesterday afternoon, Iraq time. Hundreds of people were inside the converted Canal Hotel, which has been the headquarters of the United Nations for years. Soon after the bombing, we spoke with Michael Birmingham. He's an Irish peace activist who's been in Baghdad for months with Voices in the Wilderness. He was in the UN compound when it was bombed.
Well, I was in the United Nations headquarters in Baghdad this afternoon to do some work with some families who've been under threat of eviction since the war, and I guess it was around 4:30, as people have said. I'm not exactly sure on the time. We just heard a huge explosion, and I was in the front of the building and on the computer, and I guess everything just went dark, and some of the ceiling came down and covered us in kind of dust, so there was just confusion, obviously, everywhere, although certainly it wasn't the part of the building that was by any means most badly damaged. But when those of us in the room managed to find our way out into the corridor, there was even there kind of more devastation, just with people who were very, very badly injured, some unconscious, others who are conscious but unable to move, and in great pain and with very bad injuries, and obviously because, you know, we couldn't see, nobody really knew what was going on, and some of us who were able tried to carry people out into the yard to, away from the building to safety. And, you know, we waited there then for the, with some of those people, for the helicopters and ambulances to arrive, which took a while. And a lot of the people there were, you know, they had, you know, some of them were clinging to life. They had really bad injuries. So there was any of us that had kind of first aid knowledge were trying to keep, you know, just tourniquet on people's arms to stem the bleeding and keep people's airways clear of blood. It was a terrible scene, you know. And there was maybe one or two doctors there and many American soldiers that, you know, who have come into the UN headquarters since the war. So, you know, as part of the base that some of those people came. So it was a horrible scene, and I know that from talking to people in the hospital afterwards, that the back of the UN building where probably Sergio Vieira de Mello, the UN representative, was killed is even worse and more badly damaged.
Can you then describe what happened, what you understood had happened?
Well, you know, I guess it's probably listeners know even better than me what happened. I've just heard tonight that maybe it was a truck with, you know, cement, you know, in it. You know, I'm not very sure, but what I do know is that there was also a spinal injuries hospital right next to the UN building, and a number of the people who were taken to the US military hospital where I went were from that hospital. So it's possible that the vehicle that was involved in the bombing was somewhere. It may not have been in the compound. I really don't know. Security is very tight in the UN since the war, insofar as there's these rocket launchers based outside it on a permanent basis now, and many soldiers, and they built a wall around the UN compound. But for, you know, while they've increased the military presence incredibly, it was very clear to many of us for a long time that not just in the UN, but all over Baghdad, it's the security arrangements have been done with some incredible incompetence. Like, you know, basically a lot of people in the, you know, who go into the UN building go in with IDs they make up themselves, and the US doesn't seem to have any system for vetting people, even into Paul Bremer's Republican Palace. It's the same. The security is very poor, I guess. So I don't know what happened, but it's strangely, I was talking to an Iraqi doctor I know in Yarmouk Hospital, which is one of the main, which is the largest hospital in Baghdad, just a few days ago, and he was saying he was very worried that, like the UN compound, that hospital has become an American base partly, and the doctors and the nurses, the staff who work there, we're very worried that it would make them a target. It would make the hospital a target. But the U.S. Army continues to be there, and I'm sure for the UN workers, they really have been very aware that the U.S. soldiers who decided of their own volition. Well, I mean, it certainly was a decision of higher up in the command to base themselves in the UN. Quite possibly, made it out to be a even more of a target. Who knows? Don't know why it was targeted, but. That's as much as I know of it at the moment.
How long have you been in Iraq, Michael, this time around?
I've been here since the end of April. It's in many ways it's become apparent to all of us that it's a very, very dangerous place, dangerous for everybody who's here, you know. Iraqis don't feel safe on the streets at all. Everybody, whatever their political views are, whatever their background, will tell you that Iraq is not, Baghdad is not safe. And the threat of this operation, which is, you know, for anybody who's in Baghdad knows damn well that this war is no way over, and wasn't over at the beginning of May. I mean, it's been very, even Iraqis I know who live in Doura, a large part of Baghdad, are afraid to travel to and from work because of the threat to the vehicles, and other people are just afraid to travel, obviously, because of afraid of of rape and abduction, which has been going on an incredible scale. So this attack on UN workers is another layer to that. It's terrible in its own way, because you know, these workers in the UN have many of them done incredible work here in Iraq over the years. In many of the agencies here have been a lifeline working with the Iraqi people. Many Iraqi people work for the UN and work alongside international staff from all over the world. And a lot of these workers, international and Iraqi, have tried to tell a story to the world that the world was not interested in hearing, and certainly the US government wasn't interested in hearing.
Michael Birmingham, an Irish peace activist with Voices in the Wilderness. He was in the UN compound yesterday when it was attacked. When we come back from our break, an interview with Sergio de Mello. We did it last September when Sergio de Mello was at the United Nations for the celebration of the independent of country of East Timor becoming the 191st member of the United Nations. I spoke to him after the flag-raising ceremony. Stay with us.
It was a requiem mass he prayed that day, for the spirit of justice had late passed away, and he spoke to the people who'd gathered to pray. Just before his own blood was spilled, they can kill me, but the voice of justice will never be stilled. He raised the chalice high in the air, that the blood of redemption was for all to share. He was like a reed in the standing there, then a gunshot drowned out the bells. Wine and blood on his vestments were mixed as he fell. So pray for us, Father Romero, that soon this madness be done.
Requiem by Terry Tiannino and Greg Artsner here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The UN headquarters in Baghdad has been destroyed by a truck bomb. At least 20 people have died in one of the deadliest attacks ever directed at the United Nations. Among the dead was Sergio Vieira de Mello, the top UN official in Baghdad. Dozens were also wounded. The 55-year-old Brazilian diplomat had served in the United Nations since 1969. In 2000, Vieira de Mello took the lead in the UN's transition operation in East Timor from the Indonesian occupation to East Timor's independence. De Mello described the peaceful election of Xanana Gusmão as president of East Timor as a historic moment. In late 2002, he took over as head of the UN Human Rights Commission and was appointed as UN Special Representative in Iraq earlier this year. Recognizing the security threat in Iraq, de Mello told the Security Council in July, quote, "The United Nations presence in Iraq remains vulnerable to any who would seek to target our organization." The Brazilian President Lula has declared 3 days of mourning for the Brazilian diplomat. Last September 27th, when East Timor became the 191st member of the United Nations, and the flag was raised outside the United Nations of the Democratic Republic of East Timor, Sergio de Mello was there after serving 3 years in East Timor. I talked to him about Iraq and what looked like, even then, a U.S. invasion of Iraq was imminent. But I first started talking to him about the significance of what was happening in East Timor. This is Sergio de Mello, last September.
To see that flag flying on First Avenue in front of this building is very, very important to me. As you know, this is the end of a long and painful, sad saga. The fact that East Timor today has been admitted as a full member of the United Nations is the true culmination of efforts. Efforts over centuries, not just the last 2.5 decades. And it's also no reward to all of those who attempted to support the East Timorese in their struggle. Last but not least, let me say that as new UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, to be here today, after having tried for 2.5 years to build new democratic institutions based on the rigorous respect of human rights, is also an inspiration for the future. And last but not least, an encouragement to continue to stand by East Timor in consolidating all that they have achieved with our support in the last 3 years or so. In particular, women, the right of women, their right to enjoy fully their role in society, and something that, as you know, we promoted while we were in East Timor and that I will continue to support very strongly from my new post in Geneva.
And what about an international criminal tribunal for those responsible for the killings in East Timor?
This, as you know, is a question that the Secretary General and the Security Council had decided in early 2000 to put aside so as to give the Indonesian justice system the opportunity of doing justice. Because, as you know, priority should always be given to national judicial systems. I have been very disappointed by the outcome of the recent trials. My hope is that at the appeals level, the Indonesian government and the Prosecutor General will seek much higher sentences than the 3 that the tribunal decided to give to 3 of the accused, and will seek to bring the 7 who were acquitted back into court, because otherwise the credibility of the Human Rights Tribunal of Indonesia will be questioned, and the debate over another institution, perhaps an international jurisdiction, will be reopened in this building.
Finally, on another issue, and that is the U.S. seeking the powers to bomb Iraq and to invade Iraq. Your response?
No, I will not comment on that, because that is obviously a question for the Secretary General and for the Security Council. Like in any conflict, we are concerned that civilian populations should be spared, that every effort must be made in any war, in any internal conflict, never to target civilians. And should war erupt in Iraq, I believe the Iraqi people don't deserve more suffering. They have suffered enough.
Sergio De Mello, the head of the UN mission in Iraq, he was killed yesterday when a truck bomb exploded below his office window at the UN compound in Baghdad. He died along with at least 19 others. More than 100 people were wounded. The names of the people that have been made public so far who were killed at the UN compound, in addition to Sergio De Mello, are Renio Buenaventura, who was 47, from the Philippines, working for the UN Humanitarian Coordination Office. Rick Hooper, 40 years old, from the UN Department of Political Affairs on special assignment with the UN in Iraq. Jean Salem Kanan, 33, from Egypt, employed in De Mello's office. Chris Klein Beekman, 32, of Canada, program coordinator for UNICEF in Iraq. Marilyn Manuel, 53, of the Philippines, employed in De Mello's office. Fiona Watson, 35, of Britain, political affairs officer working in De Mello's office, and Captain Manuel Martin Orr of Spain, working for Spanish Special Ambassador to Iraq, Miguel Benzo Perea. Just some of the names of the casualties in Iraq yesterday, in one of the deadliest attacks on the United Nations in its 58-year history. You are listening to Democracy Now! As we turn now to the man who occupied the office that De Mello was in when he was killed in the year 2000 and before, Hans von Sponeck, the former Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations. He was the UN Chief Humanitarian Officer for Iraq until he resigned in February of 2000, saying that the sanctions regime against Iraq were killing the people there. I reached him in Germany.
Well, what I must say first is it's a great tragedy when one loses colleagues that one has known very well. Mr. De Mello was not only a colleague, but had become a friend, particularly in the context of the Iraq discussion. When I served in Baghdad, he was the Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs in New York, and we frequently consulted. It's a great loss. The United Nations will have great difficulty to replace this eminent civil servant, and it will set back the role that the United Nations can play to alleviate the suffering of the Iraqi people in this post-war period. On the other hand, I would say anyone who is taken by surprise either doesn't know the Iraq situation or is simply willing to ignore the signs that are all pervasive, that there is a shift from targeting the U.S. military, to a lesser extent the British military, because they are increasingly protecting themselves against attacks. And the choice of those who are the extreme end of dissatisfaction in Iraq are softer targets. We have seen oil installations being attacked, water facilities blown up, electricity facilities disabled, and we have had this terrifying blast at the Jordanian embassy just over a week ago, and now the United Nations. It isn't a surprise. The Iraqi people are angry, and the range of anger goes from simple dissatisfaction with the lack of progress in restoring normalcy to these extreme forms of hostility towards those who have, as President Bush only today after this blast again repeated, allegedly brought freedom to Iraq. This is not freedom. An imposed, externally imposed freedom rather than an Iraqi made freedom is no real freedom, and we will see more of what has happened today as we go along, unless the CPA, the Coalition Provisional Authority, the American and British victors are changing their approach.
We're talking to Hans von Sponeck, who is the former UN coordinator for the Oil for Food program in Iraq. Do you know this office well? This office in particular, was it yours?
I was 17 months in that office. It's as you enter the building, on the left side of that building, second floor. This is where I think the major impact of this blast occurred. It's a former hotel, cheaply built. A little bit amazing that an incoming army wasn't able to move in heavy earth-moving or other heavy equipment that could remove some of the collapsed walls. But that's how it is. And we, of course, don't know yet the extent of casualties, but the suicide bombers, and I presume they were, hit the most vulnerable corner of this building.
I had a question about what was on the grounds. Were there any chemicals, perhaps biological or chemical weapons, that the UN had gathered there?
No, because they had been dismantled in 1999, July, when the Office of Chemical Weapon Prohibition in The Hague, at really my request, because month after month, I'd asked the United Nations to send a team to open the laboratories that Richard Butler, the chief of the disarmament group of the United Nations, had left behind, irresponsibly left behind. So they came with a team headed by a South African expert of chemical weapons to come to be Baghdad to neutralize these substances. They found at the time a kilogram of mustard gas, anthrax, VX, taboon, zarin, samples that were used for calibration. They were not a problem, but the mustard gas certainly was, had it come into contact with fire, water, or other external influences. But that's all gone. So there was today no more laboratory that could have posed a threat in addition to the external threat through the bombs.
What do you mean that Richard Butler had irresponsibly left there?
Well, Mr. Butler, first of all, knew what he had left behind. When on the 16th of December 1998, when Operation Desert Fox began, when he withdrew his team, while the Secretary General left us, and that was a good decision, the humanitarian workers in Baghdad, and the records can give evidence to the fact that on the same day I began to write to the UN to ask that the laboratories be looked at, and it took many months. In fact, it took 6 months, over 6 months, before finally a team came to open these laboratories and dismantle what there was. And Mr. Butler knew this. Mr. Butler, who has played such an enormously dishonorable role in this whole affair, pretended that he had the security in mind, but did little to actually accelerate the opening of these facilities and the disabling. He knew what was there, and therefore he also knew the potential threat that existed for the safety not only of United Nations staff, but also of the people that lived in the vicinity of the UN building that today was the subject of the bombing.
And where did these chemicals come from?
Well, some of them, as we now know, were brought in legitimately as substances that were needed for calibration purposes. These were controlled substances. That was all in order. There was nothing wrong in bringing these in, and they were also, as we were told, not dangerous in case there had been an aerial attack, as there was in December 98, or an earthquake, or whatever. But in addition, there were substances that the UNSCOM, the disarmament group, had taken from the Iraqis and stored in that laboratory, including this 1 kilogram of mustard gas. And that was the problem. And that's where one can make an accusation to Mr. Butler, who never was an international civil servant. He never felt like an international civil servant. He was a king in his field, he thought, and I'm very accusatory here, but I think with justification, because he did not do what a responsible international civil servant would have done, and that is to make sure that these laboratory facilities would have been very quickly neutralized with the urgency that the issue deserved.
Hans von Sponeck, we are now hearing that at least 17 people are dead, over 100 are wounded. Did you know any of the other people who are still at the United Nations compound in Iraq? And can you describe that area? that you worked in for so many months?
Well, you know, I don't know yet. I haven't seen, apart from my colleague, Mr. De Mello, I don't know who else may be among the casualties. There are certainly many international and national staff who worked there today who were in that building when I was there. So I have to see. I pray that some of those who with whom I worked are not among the casualties, but I feel sorry for any of my colleagues who have become victimized by this brutal but not surprising attack. It's the building itself is on three sides. There are no other buildings. On the fourth side, and that's the side that was particularly affected by this blast, there is a military psychiatric treatment facility, or it was at least in my days. That's the only building that is immediately adjacent to the Canal Hotel, apart from some service buildings, like an auto repair workshop that's on the compound, but that's of no consequence. That's a light building, not a big problem. But behind the back of the building opens into an area that used to be an airfield of the Iraqi Air Force that was abandoned even before this war. In the distance, about 800 meter air distance, is a building that played a prominent role in the Operation Desert Fox, the American-British air offensive of December 1998. It's the building where the Amalam, the general security building of the Iraqi Secret Service, was situated. That was damaged then. But that's quite a distance away, as I say. It's about, let's say, 800 to 900 yards away. Building, unlike the reports that I heard this afternoon, is not quite far away from the center of Baghdad. In fact, it's on the outskirts of Baghdad. There are several highways that are passing by in the vicinity, and it is therefore not in an area that is highly populated.
We're speaking with Hans von Sponeck. He is the former Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations. He was the head of the UN Oil for Food Program in Iraq until February 2000, when he resigned in protest over the continued sanctions against the people of Iraq. We'll return with him in a moment. Wamelo by Warda here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman as we continue with our conversation with Hans von Sponeck, who occupied the office that De Mello was killed in yesterday, Sergio De Mello, the chief of the UN mission in Iraq. Again, Hans von Sponeck, the former Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations until February 2000, when he resigned in protest of the sanctions imposed against Iraq. We are talking to Hans von Sponeck, formerly head of UN operations in Iraq, now remembering his colleague, only at this point the one that he knows who has died. That's Sergio De Mello. Many other people have died, news not yet out of their names. You were there during the bombing of Iraq in 1998 when Clinton was the president of the United States. We are seeing these horrific pictures. The actual picture, someone had NHK, a Japanese television, in the midst of a press conference when the bomb went off, glass shattered, and then you see people who are wounded. We don't usually get images like this when Iraqi civilians are attacked, because the cameras are not usually in their homes. People are embedded in the military, or they're here at this press conference. But you were there during that time. What was it like? Is it bringing back memories?
Well, I would say if I had to choose between what's happening in Iraq now and what happened in the building that was my office for these 17 months today, and what happened in December 98 during Operation Desert Fox, during those 4 days of bombing, if I had to make a choice, I would prefer to revisit what happened in 1998. That was a much more focused, almost predictable attack on buildings that the U.S. intelligence, the British intelligence, had carved out, had marked. Today, this was totally unexpected. It was a target that no one had in mind. United Nations, an unarmed organization that is meant to promote peace. No one thought that the swaying towards softer targets would go that way, to have such a soft target as the United Nations in Baghdad involved. So I would say 98 was harmless compared to what happened today, not only because of the casualties, but also because of the trauma that is deepening now for not only the international staff living in Iraq, but also for the people of Iraq who have gone through so much and who are happy to see a dictator having gone. But what they have right now is, in terms of day-to-day living, worse than what they had before the dictator was gone. So it is, to me, as a person who has lived there, who appreciates the Iraqis in their pride, in their willingness to survive, it's a bitter cynicism when I hear the President of the United States talking about freedom for Iraqis, having brought the freedom. There is no such thing as. There is an American freedom that an ill-directed U.S. administration has tried to bring down by parachute, but it's not an Iraqi freedom. And no calm, no tranquility, no normalcy will return to that country until the American administration understands that only an Iraqi-made freedom will bring that peace that they are talking about so much in Washington.
Hans von Sponeck, Salim Lone, spokesperson for the United Nations in Iraq, came out of the rubble and was interviewed and said the mission of the United Nations is to end the occupation. He was extremely upset and angry. Do you see that that is the mission? I mean, earlier the documents that came out showing the UN recognized, said that they would be playing a subservient role to the occupying powers. Those documents released from the Executive Committee on Peace and Security.
What comes to my mind when I hear you, Amy, is what was indeed the last meeting that my colleagues, Mr. De Mello, Undersecretary General and in charge of the Iraq programs now, had to say on the 17th of July in the Security Council. repeatedly he reminded, and the Secretary General's report reflects this, the Security Council, that what happens in Iraq must be Iraq-made. It mustn't be an externally imposed development. He cautioned the Security Council, obviously directing his caution primarily to the occupying powers, the U.S. and Britain, to believing that there can be an indefinite period of their presence and involvement, that the first fiddle in this reconstruction period must be played, he kept saying, by the Iraqis themselves. I think this, what now is maybe is the final speech of Mr. De Mello to the Security Council. I hope that everyone, from the Secretary General to Colin Powell, to President Bush, to Prime Minister Blair, I hope they all will remember that and do what needs to be done now. First of all, to give a greater leeway to local leadership. Secondly, to try and internationalize the Iraq reconstruction effort. And by that, I do not mean that the international community now should pick up the cost of the damages that were created by two ill-directed governments that decided to go to war against Iraq, but to help in the reconstruction effort, rehabilitating the infrastructure, trying to rebuild the education system, the water system, and so on. All that which had nothing to do with the war damages. The war damages, I'm sorry, must be the responsibility of those who fought this illegal war. But the others, the other many challenging aspects of reconstruction in Iraq, the international community must help. The Americans, as the leading occupying power headed by Mr. Bremer, must become much more sensitive towards giving the United Nations and others a role of equals, not the role of a sub-agency of the Defense Department of the United States or of the State Department in internationalizing the reconstruction effort. And in fact, I would hope that the Security Council can really become the lead agent in the reconstruction effort. That's where that effort belongs, not to a bilateral capital. And then I think we have learned a little bit out of very tragic circumstances that culminated today in the attack on the UN building.
The reports were that there were some U.S. soldiers standing guard, but only in a few guards in one area outside the United Nations compound. It sounds like it was isolated. Do you know how this compares to the number of soldiers who stand guard at the oil ministry or at the oil fields?
No, I don't. But I do know that the United Nations, for good reasons, always was reluctant to be guarded. Even during my days, we had Iraqi army surrounding the Canal Hotel compound. We accepted that, but we were not comfortable with that. And I take it that the same applied to the current situation. The United Nations being heavily guarded by troops of a country that fought a war that many Iraqis didn't want wasn't seen as very wise. So the UN was one of the softer targets in Baghdad. And on top of it, and I think that is a security lesson for the United Nations and maybe for the CPA, for the provisional authority, is that one shouldn't just guard the entrance to that United Nations compound. The back was relatively unprotected, so were the sides. So one had a very close security look at the main entrance to the UN compound. And I think those who planned this attack today, of course, exploited that and avoided placing the truck near the better guarded part of that Canal Hotel compound.
Do you think that if Saddam Hussein were captured, that this would still go on?
Again, I would really say the sooner we accept the fact that dissatisfaction extends in Iraq, extends beyond remnants of the Ba'ath Party or of loyalists that can't understand that to be without the dictatorship is a blessing for Iraq, the sooner we understand that the dissatisfaction in Iraq goes way beyond those groups. Or worse, James Rubin, the former spokesman during the days of Madeleine Albright in the State Department, today in an interview with CNN kept talking about thousands of Saudi Arabian irregulars and terrorists entering, and he said, I don't, but he said, entering Iraq from northern Iraq, in other words, not even from the Saudi border area. I think this is either there is a group of leaders, political leaders, that are fooling themselves in Washington, or they want to believe that they can fool others, including us here in Europe. I'm sorry, it's quite different. The dissatisfaction, as I said before, goes way beyond these clusters of dissatisfaction and maybe a few misdirected people who would like to go into Iraq to assist those elements of extremists. If one believes that, one doesn't really understand the reality of today's Iraq.
Hans von Sponeck, the former UN Assistant Secretary General, his office was de Mello's, Sergio de Mello's. Sergio de Mello, the chief of the UN compound in Iraq, was killed yesterday along with at least 19 others when a car bomb struck the UN compound in Baghdad. Hans von Sponeck was speaking to us from Germany. And we wrap up today in Jerusalem. At least 20 people died there last night when a Palestinian suicide bomber blew up a bus in Jerusalem. More than 100 people injured. New York Times described as one of the deadliest attacks since the Second Intifada began 3 years ago. New York Times says the bomber was named Raid Abdul Hamid Misk, appeared in a videotape with a rifle in one hand, a Quran in the other, saying, "We're proud to offer ourselves and our lives and our houses as a present to this religion." He said the people of Palestine commit themselves to ceasefire, but the criminal Sharon refused this commitment and killed many people in Palestine. In a phone call to the Associated Press, a representative of Islamic Jihad warned Israel could face retribution like an earthquake. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz reports Sharon is meeting with advisors today to discuss Israel's response. We turn now to Abe Greenhouse, who is a member of Central Jersey Jews Against the Occupation. He witnessed the bus bombing. He's in Israel with the International Solidarity Movement.
The scene was brightly lit up by floodlights that were brought out by the authorities. As they were working to extract people from the wreckage. I got up to right about 30 feet away from where the bodies were being taken off of the bus, and the whole scene was very surreal. I saw one body being loaded onto an ambulance, which couldn't have been more than 3 or 4 feet tall.
Abe Greenhouse with the International Solidarity Movement, Central Jersey Jews Against the Occupation, witness to the bus bombing yesterday in Jerusalem. And that does it for the show. If you'd like to get a copy, video or audio, you can call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359. Our website, www.democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, Lenina Nadal, and Nagar Elizabeth Press, Pervez Sharma, Mike DeFilippo, our engineer. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.